Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
Good morning. It is the end of the week. Happy Friday. Getting prepared before the week of Thanksgiving. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning. Oh, I'm thinking about the food for Thanksgiving. Turkey, sweet potatoes. I make a mean sweet potato casserole, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My whole family requested it. My aunt, actually. We're not going to be all together this year. She's like, you going to make a little extra for me? Send my way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a favorite. It's a favorite in the family. It's really sweet. It's good.
My parents are English, and they are heading to England this week, so this is going to be their first time with the Thanksgiving without them, and luckily I won't be making fun of them for this Thanksgiving.
Why do you make fun of them?
Well, because they're English. So I'm like, you're allowed to celebrate this with us?
They just can't celebrate July 4th.
Oh, okay.
That's the one, Independence Day.
Yes.
So Thanksgiving, okay, they're fine. You know, the English came out here. They're, you know, they were thankful.
Yeah.
All that, you know.
But anyway, okay, last night, that game, for one, was awful. That Thursday night game, before we get to what happened toward the end, all the theatrics.
Something happened last night?
Something happened.
A wee bit.
And, of course, we're not going to discuss this the entire day. We're going to spend a few minutes on it because we're already getting texts on the Chilton Autobody text line here, and the show hasn't even started. But, for one, that Steelers-Browns game was awful. Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph both just didn't look like they knew what they were doing out there. Baker Mayfield, for the first drive of the game, he looked okay. Then after that, it was just whatever. Mason Rudolph did not look good. The Steelers' defense was the only thing that might have been enjoyable to watch as the Browns took down the Steelers 21-7. Anna, I was on my way to bed. Mm-hmm. This was in the middle of the fourth quarter. I was like, I don't need to watch any more of this game. I don't think anything's going to happen with the Steelers. When Mason Rudolph threw that pick and the Browns scored the touchdown, I'm just like, all right, I don't need to watch any more of this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to bed, get up nice, bright and early so I can have a good show here from 5 to 6. And then I get a text from my brother saying, dude, you got to turn on the TV right now. I'm like, what? Like, what happened? And then he's just like, Myles Garrett went crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then the play that he was talking about was this one.
There's a flag as, whoa, hello, whoa. Mason Rudolph got into it.
Out of there.
What in the world? Believe Myles Garrett? They'll be swinging a helmet?
Yeah, there'll be some ejections.
Coming out of this,
there may be suspensions.
That's right, suspensions.
Well, he tackled Rudolph. Rudolph didn't like the way that he was tackled.
Oh, man. Oh. And then Ogunjobi comes up and hits Rudolph from behind.
Beyond words,
oh,
Joe.
Oh, gosh. That's one of the worst things I've ever seen on a professional sports field.
Shout out to Fox and NFL Network for the audio. So at the beginning, that's when they were seeing it in real time. They didn't actually see the action of Myles Garrett taking off Mason Rudolph's helmet and trying to hit him with it. And they didn't actually see Mason Rudolph hit. Because that camera angle at first, when it's just going in real time, you can't really tell that
No.
he actually got hit.
Nope.
And then it was a slow-mo, and Joe Buck and Troy Aikman kind of had the same reaction that we all did when we were watching. We're just like, What happened? We've seen this before. Richie Incognito, when he was on the Dolphins, he got his head swung out one time. But but they missed. And they didn't connect like this one happened. I think the most surprising thing, for one, is Steelers, why are you passing the ball?
Yeah, seriously.
Why are you passing the ball with that little time left on the clock? Like, it's not like the 49ers and the Seahawks when they were in overtime and we're having this whole argument about whether the 49ers should go for the win or go for the tie. We'll get to some sound from Richard Sherman talking about that coming up a little later on in the show. If you had any sort of strong opinion on that, Richard Sherman might either change it or validate it. I can tell you I'm on one of those sides.
You're so excited about it.
I'm very excited about it. This whole helmet situation, though, I just think we've seen Myles Garrett on Hard Knocks and stuff. He seems to come off as a soft-spoken dude. We've actually seen he was suspended for one game already in this season, but you wouldn't expect something like that.
No, not at all. And right before, just like you were saying, you were going to bed. I'm getting my kid ready for bed. So I had the game on in the other room in the background. And all of a sudden, I hear the call and hearing the economy of words from Joe Buck, as we like to say on the morning show, on Joe Lo Dibs in the morning. And just the shock. And so I ran inside the room to see what was going on. And I was just dumbfounded by what was going on. What's sad about this is Myles Garrett is such an incredible defender. He's so good. But he is now going to be tainted from this. I mean, when you think of Myles Garrett, this is one of the first things you're going to think of. This is going to be one of the, you know, you're going to think of, he's a great player, but now he's going to have that moniker of he's a dirty player. So, unfortunately, that's what's coming out of this, too, is, I mean, he really did not do himself a good service at all. And there was a lot of shock around the league last night. I mean, he had guys like Patrick Mahomes, who was tweeting out, bro, I can't even believe that just happened. J.J. Watt, that is absolute insanity. Wow. I mean, James Harrison, who was a former Steelers linebacker,
one of the scariest players of all time.
Seriously, goodness. But he said, that's assault, at least 6 months in jail on the street. Now add the weapon, and that's at least a year, right? I'm not saying went that far, but at the same time, you know that he's definitely going to get suspended. Shout out to Pouncey, who came in. He's going to get suspended, too, but he came to the aid of his quarterback. What do you think of that, though, too?
That's fine. Going at the aid of the quarterback, the kick is really, I think, what's going to do it over the top for him. But him just punching the helmet, the guy's got a helmet on. I'm surprised Pouncey's hand isn't broken or something like that, because I think people are underestimating the power of the helmet. The helmet is just incredibly strong and incredibly thick, and I think what's getting lost in all of this is that Mason Rudolph got off lucky, because it hit the underside of the helmet, hit the top of Mason Rudolph's head. And I'm not understanding this whole narrative that Mason Rudolph came at him. He sort of did on the ground, but it was Myles Garrett when he was on the ground that took his face mask, took his helmet off, which got Myles Garrett, which forced Mason Rudolph to walk up, because what are you going to do? You're just going to lay on the ground and let a guy take your helmet off? No, you're going to go with the motion so you don't break your neck. And then he ends up getting picked up basically by his face mask, then getting the helmet ripped off and getting it hit on top of his head. If that helmet was turned around on the other side, we'd be seeing a complete, this whole thing would be a completely different story. These people on the text line from the 510, all you snowflakes need to find another career. Football is a violent sport and the players have violent personalities. If you don't have an inner gladiator, then I don't want you on my team. The social softness is sad. Get that out of here.
Come on.
That sort of thing would be completely different if the other side of the helmet was being used. It's so crazy when people are sitting there on their couch thinking, I'm looking through Twitter. I couldn't get to sleep last night because NFL Twitter was just going crazy. But I'm like, yo, this is like something completely different. I think people are misunderstanding here, and I want to get to these comments from Baker Mayfield post game. I want to see what you think about that. But yeah, it's just, it felt like that could have been a lot worse. And the suspension, for me, it's got to go for the rest of the season. If you're going to suspend Vontaze Burfict for that hit on Jack Doyle,
very good call on that.
That whole thing was not only, that wasn't just for the hit, though. That was also for everything he's done in the past. But the whole point is so it can prevent this type of thing from happening again. How are you supposed to trust Myles Garrett after this? Man, I don't know.
And this is a really bad time for the Browns. I mean, the Browns should have been celebrating a victory. They should have been celebrating, you know, a 21-7 win over the Steelers, getting excited about this. And then all of a sudden, they're just stopped dead in their tracks right now. How is this going to affect the team moving forward? Now you have this whole drama just circulating. You have this soap opera going on within the locker room. How does the defense bounce back? Because now you're losing a huge piece of your defense right now with Myles Garrett with what he did. So, I mean, they should have been celebrating, but unfortunately they can't.
From Josina Anderson on Twitter, she tweeted out or retweeted last night. I'm paraphrasing the tweet that she retweeted, but it was from a Browns reporter. He basically said that there were two cops that left the Browns locker room last night, and she actually just cleared it up from over a half an hour ago. Quote, I'm told per Browns PR that police presence postgame was both routine and also to ensure their assistance wasn't needed once players left the field. So who knows what sort of legal issues can come with this, but this is unprecedented, and people are talking about how this type of thing happens all the time. It doesn't. We haven't seen it connect like this before, and I just don't understand how anyone can look at the contrarian approach about this. When this guy says Mason Rudolph gets off free, huh? I'm like, well, what? Like, what?
Wait, you should just stand there? No, okay, go ahead and hit me.
Like, how would you be looking at Mason Rudolph now, say, if he just didn't go after Myles Garrett and he just let that happen? Mason Rudolph, he spoke after the postgame. He's like, I'm not going to back down to anybody. So it's just, there's a whole situation with this, but you got to be able to control yourself to the point where you're not going to swing your helmet at another guy's head.
His
own helmet at his head.
Well, I'm the type of mom that I tell my son, look, I don't want you starting any fights. Be a good kid. But if somebody goes after you, you try to step back. But you know what? If someone goes after you, you better damn well finish it. So, you know, you got to protect yourself. I'm sorry, but you've got to be able to stand up for yourself. And this is the type of situation when somebody's coming after you, he's swinging a helmet at his head. How much has the NFL worked at protecting players' heads, especially the quarterback and what they go through, too?
And from the 510, he grabbed Myles Garrett's helmet first. The society is so soft. Don't sit here and blame one adult. This man is a starting quarterback. He needs to take some accountability of his actions. He started it.
Grabbing a helmet.
2-4 game suspension for Rudolph. Now, I will give you this. Rudolph did, on the ground, it looked like he tried to do something with Myles Garrett's helmet, but Myles Garrett kept it going. Mm-hmm. and legitimately, he could have easily, once Mason Rudolph started getting off the ground, Myles Garrett could have easily just let go, but he kept on going. I just don't understand the contrarian approach to this at all. It should be just, that's just me. I guess as a soft society, as we put it, it's like the tough guys that come out of this after these situations. It's crazy. It's crazy to me.
Just seeing his head bouncing. I mean, there's another one. Yeah. There's a closer. If you see the one from Adam Schefter, actually, it's the one who tweeted that one out. The close-up shot of the actual hit. I mean, I'm in pain looking at this.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's too much. And look, I'm with you. There's no excuse for it. This is not soft. This is just something that should not be accounted for. This is wrong.
And it's pretty obvious, I think, like what we've been saying this entire first segment. It should be pretty obvious. Like, I don't even think this should be like some sort of like discussion. I mean, it's gonna be. But, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other ramifications from this. We are really getting down to, like, the simplicity of it. Just, like, you know, just going on about what happened. But if you haven't seen what happened, I recommend you go on, you know, Twitter, ESPN, whatever. Imagine being on the East Coast, because East Coasters, they weren't watching that game.
No, they were going to bed.
They were going to bed.
By the way, 49ers fullback Kyle Juszczyk also tweeted out that Garrett should not be allowed to play another snap this season.
Yeah.
So, you know what they think over here. No.
Yeah, there are the guys that are actually playing in this sport. It's just, you know, I mean, Myles Garrett is huge, too.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's one of the strongest in the league. Like, that guy, when he's coming at you like that, it's like, that's what makes it all the more terrifying. Although I don't like the fact that it's like, well, Myles Garrett is stronger, so he should know better. I'm just like, well, that's a little bit of a, there's a dividing line there. No one should be able to do this, no matter how, you know, how strong you are compared to the rest in the league. There's no person in the NFL who should be able to do this, regardless of how big you are. But I want to get to these post-game press conferences with Baker Mayfield, because this one is what set off a stir. And then coming up at 5:30, we'll get to the Niners and the Cardinals, as well as the Raiders and the Bengals. We got a couple of matchups coming up here on Sunday.
Big ones.
Chilton Autobody text line 95795, 888-957-9570. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakadaki's in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. We are getting some texts here rolling in on the Chilton Autobody text line here at 95795. But the one thing that really started the whole arguments over social media and over Twitter was what Baker Mayfield did post-game. And this was his instant reaction here with Aaron Andrews after the game.
Baker, what was your reaction as you were watching it unfold?
I didn't see why it started, but it's inexcusable. You know, I don't care, rivalry or not, we can't do that. That's kind of the history of, you know, what's been going on here lately, hurting yourself, and that's just endangering the other team. That's inexcusable. He knows that. I hope he does now. It's just, it's tough. We'll see.
Mason Rudolph, a friend of yours, Myles Garrett, a teammate of yours. What were you saying to your teammates over there to kind of calm everybody down?
I don't think there's anything in that moment that I can really say to calm him down. You know what? The reality is he's going to get suspended. We don't know how long, and that hurts our team. And we can't do that. We can't continue to hurt this team. It's inexcusable.
Moving forward, you do get the win tonight. I mean, despite obviously ending the game like that. And this is what you said. You wanted to finish the second half of the season strong. What can you build off of what you were able to do offensively?
We still didn't play good enough at all. You know, it came out and had a great first drive. And then, you know, kind of sputtered out a little bit. We have to be able to capitalize when defense gets that many turnovers. We'll look at the film. We got to get better from that. Offensively, it's still not even close to being good enough.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was, for Aaron Andrews, that must have been one where she just did not know what to do, because you had 10 seconds left in that game. You're not expecting anything to happen. It's like, how am I supposed to talk to the quarterback here when they've been getting scrutinized left and right? Now they finally got a win against a divisional opponent. And, I mean, I got to ask him about this. And then, I mean, she had to be obligated to ask him about the game afterwards. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, the whole situation with Rudolph and Garrett, it stunk. And not happy about that. But when I heard the last line of question, I'm like, oof. Like, Baker doesn't want to be there right now.
No, Baker's done. He's just like, I can't. I just want to be out of here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard. It's hard as a sideline reporter to be like, okay, I got to ask these guys. You know, they're thinking of, I got the win, we're happy. But, you know, like I said, this was a dark cloud over the win. And you're not thinking about the Browns winning. You're thinking about what his teammate did. And how it was absolutely, as Mason Rudolph said later, it was cowardly. It was Bush League. It was just wrong, flat out wrong. And to be in that situation, it's a question she had to ask. She had to address it because, you see it everywhere. And that's the main storyline coming out of this game.
Do you think it was wrong for Baker to call out his teammate like that, just saying that he should be suspended or he's going to be suspended? So we have to be, that's the reality of it. I think people took that the wrong way. It's just like, yes, it's going to happen. It's not like he's snitching on him or anything like that.
He's going to get suspended because of that.
Bruce Irvin called it a dry snitch on Twitter. And I'm like, I don't really understand that, because it happened right there. Maybe there's something I'm missing with that entire thing. But in that moment in time, I don't know how else Baker Mayfield's supposed to answer that question. Like, I just don't understand, because he wants to be one of these guys. I mean, he's in all these commercials. He's in all this stuff. He wants to be one of the faces of the NFL. And right now, he's obviously become one of the more guys that you're laughing at, just because of, you've seen his post-game interviews with the way he looked and the whole the trench coat and everything. So he's not exactly having that image right now. But he put off, like, if he would have just said, you know, he could have, like, dusted off the question maybe and just said, you know, we're going to go back. We're going to look at it. I'm not going to comment on that right now. He could have said that, but he took a leadership role, and And it just became a big thing on Twitter last night. That's one of the issues that a lot of people had, was that he called out his own teammate for it.
I understand he called out his own teammate, but at the same time, he's also the quarterback. He knows what it's like, and he knows how, one, it was wrong completely, and it is almost, is there almost maybe a quarterback boys club also, too, where it's like, you kind of also got to stand up for your other quarterbacks as well? Not saying, obviously, your division rivals and things like that, but you don't want that happening to you. So if you say, hey, you know, we'll have to talk about it after, almost not making a stance on it, if it comes back at you, is it almost, you know, is it kind of hypocritical almost at that point? Is it something that he should have to address because he has to take that leadership role? I don't have an issue with it. Yeah, maybe he could have addressed it later, but on the spot, he knew it was just flat out wrong.
Yeah, and he did not look thrilled when he was on the sideline. Did you watch him after it? Whoever the little coach was that's on their sideline, I don't know who it was, but he's like, Baker Mayfield's just sitting there staring, just not happy at all.
Because he's in shock.
Yeah, right. They just came off the win. You know, they just beat their division rival 21-7, and he's just standing there. And the little coach is like trying to give him words of encouragement, but Baker was having none of it. The whole situation, just for him being put right there, I think he handled it just as well as he could have handled it. I mean, he could have handled that a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Probably being suspended is, and that's just the reality, is like about as tame as you could possibly make it without answering, or with, when you're answering the question. That's about as tame as it could be.
Yeah, the NFL is not going to suspend because, like, oh, you know what? Baker Mayfield's right. We should suspend him. It ain't happening that way.
Yeah, yeah.
That was already decided once that happened.
Yeah. And there's been also a lot of comparisons, I think, to baseball, and just, you know, guys are given a weapon basically with the baseball and they're throwing 95 miles an hour at guys. That's something I also have an issue with. I don't think they come down hard enough on those dudes. The only problem is they can't prove the intent when it comes to baseball. Like, you can look at the actions beforehand, you could look at the plays beforehand, but you can't legitimately say, yes, that pitcher was trying to hit him, because the pitcher's just going to be like, no, I wasn't trying to do that.
No.
I was trying to get it away from him. But I personally think we need to come down harder on those guys, because it's not the exact same thing, because just being more direct, just going and straight hitting him with a helmet is pretty damn bad. But I think throwing baseballs at guys intentionally, I think that needs to come down a little harder, when it's at the head, at least. When it's at the body, that's like, I mean, that's one thing. Just hitting them in the ribs, the batters are trained to turn around and kind of take it on the back where it's not going to hurt as much. But, I mean, that still deserves some sort of form of punishment. But when you throw at a guy's head, that's when I think guys need to be reprimanded a little more. And that's where I'm at with the whole baseball situation. But I've been seeing a lot of comparisons with that, and that's just kind of where I'm at with that.
I'm completely with you on that, because we've seen so many studies on what head injuries can do to people, not only in the short term but in the long run. It's just, you know, concussions. And you've seen guys, even in baseball, who sustain concussions, not even to the extent that a lot of these football players do, but just seeing what happens afterwards and how it changes their lives and how difficult it is to come back from that, there is a focus on, you need to make sure to keep the head safe, because that is incredibly important. So I'm with you both ways when it comes to baseball, headhunters. It's just completely wrong.
I mean, one thing that's getting lost in all this right now, I mean, the Raiders are in the wild card round as of right now. If you look at the playoff picture, they'd be playing, if the season were to end today, if that were the last game of the season, the Raiders and the Texans and the Bills and the Chiefs, they'd be playing in the AFC wild card right now. Little shades of Connor Cook going back against the Texans. That was before Derek Carr got hurt. But that's what we'd probably be talking about this morning, because this game was actually had some implications, because it looks like the Ravens, as of now, are probably going to take the AFC North.
Right.
And the Steelers were the Steelers could have had a chance there if they would have won this game. They could have been 6-4, and this was actually a big game for the Steelers to get the win. But now the Raiders are up there in that wild card round, and this makes this game against the Bengals all the more important.
Yeah.
The Bengals seem to be that team, though, that's kind of like, seems like they've given up.
Oh, God. It's just become sad, because it looked like they were actually like competing every now and then. But no. This team is, I think they're going for that. They're going for that number one pick.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. They're going. I mean, they're Who's worse now to you, Bengals or Dolphins? Dolphins are actually trying out there.
Yeah, the Dolphins, their coach at least has them playing for something. Brian Flores, being a Bill Belichick guy, he has them playing for something. But it seems like the Bengals right now, they benched Andy Dalton. Doesn't seem like they have any faith in him. I actually got to look up the status of AJ Green. Not sure if he's coming back, but who knows the kind of...
He was supposed to, and then all of a sudden, nope, never mind.
Yeah, who knows the kind of impact that he's supposed to have. I'm pretty sure John Ross is supposed to be coming back, so you might have that threat. But this is a game where the Raiders are favored, and this is going to be all the more important for them when they're heading into this little playoff hunt that they're in, because I don't think many of us expected it with that tough road trip they had in the first half of the season, which they came out a little bit scathed, but not as scathed as we expected. Is there anything such thing as scathed besides unscathed? Is that the only time that scathed is used? Because I've never heard unscathed.
You're right. Never gone unscathed.
Way.
When is scathed? I should just tweet it.
I've never heard scathed before.
When do you use the word scathed?
Oh, we'll look that up in the break. Chilton Autobody text line 95795 888 957-9570. We are going to get to some actual football, though, because we do have the 49ers-Cardinals matchup this weekend, and Richard Sherman spoke to the media, and he had some comments about whether the 49ers should have gone for the tie or they should have gone for the win in the overtime by throwing three straight times. We'll get into all that next, plus a bunch of injury updates for the Niners. How many are on the injury report? I think 14.
Yikes.
I think we're half of them did not participate, and half of them were limited. So I'm pretty sure 14 players were on that injury report. We'll give that update for you. All coming up next. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakanaki, on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford and Anna Kakadakis.
The pregame show is presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee meet and greet with our product experts. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com for dates and more information. We are getting some texts here on the Chilton Auto Body text line, and before we get to these comments here from Richard Sherman, Anna, there's a story about what, Christmas decorations?
Yeah,
people already putting them up?
Yeah, so there's a Texas family that said their homeowner's insurance actually demanded that they take down their inflatable snowmen that the family had put up on the lawn because it was too early for Christmas decorations. Now, they put it up also, and also they had a blow-up reindeer, a Santa Claus, and a helicopter. But the family lives in Texas, and they actually put up their decorations on November 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So the family opted for an early setup because the mother was actually 8 months pregnant at the time. But they ended up getting a letter from the HOA saying maintenance, holiday decorations need to be removed. Please remove the snowmen until closer to the holiday season. A lot of people, though, a lot of outrage about this. The family decided they will not do that because they wanted to put up again because the wife's pregnant. She does not, within a month right now.
Yeah.
You know, she's not going to be able to do it later on. She wanted to have some fun with her family. In fact, though, residents in that community are actually joining the cause and putting up their Christmas decorations in solitude of the family, the Simonis family. But a little fact also, the HOA actually said that they never gave a specific date on when you can decorate. So that's the problem. Look, is it too early to decorate for Christmas? Maybe. Yes, I'd say a little bit early. I like to wait till Thanksgiving. But to come on and say you have to take out your decorations,
I'm with it.
It's wrong. No.
I'm all with it.
As long as you wait for Halloween.
I'm trying to forget that the wife of the family's pregnant, the mom of the family's pregnant.
That's
the key. Try to forget about that whole aspect. Other than that, fine with it.
The HOA never specified a date.
Take them down.
They never specified a date. There's nothing in the rules. You don't have a date, can't do it. I'm sorry. They should leave it up there.
Yeah.
Do not hate, decorate. It's all good. It is all good. And somebody who actually also...
Take them down.
No. Somebody who actually wanted to decorate. You know what then? You know who won't like you? Richard Sherman.
Really?
Richard Sherman, I think that same day, November 1st, had tweeted out something saying that he was trying to convince his wife he wants to decorate for Christmas. And she said, no, it's too early. Well, she actually ended up giving in, and they ended up decorating their house early, and he's been tweeting out how excited it is to have Christmas music. The kids are running around. And by the way, I forgot to tell you, got some Christmas pajamas already. I'm really excited about these. My kid, I got him
Christmas
these
pajamas.
They're onesie Christmas pajamas. They're Christmas tree ones that have a little star on top. My kid's like, hey, Mom, you should get a pair too. I'm like, let me go check.
Oh,
and the
my
beautiful
gosh.
Thing about being 5 foot two, I still fit the kid's size.
Like,
it's great.
It's all too much.
No, I love it.
It's all too much.
I love it.
It's fine now. We're halfway through the month. We're about to come up on Thanksgiving. It's fine now. But if it's November 1st, take them down.
Don't take them down. You can decorate people. All personally, right. Like I said, I say wait for the Thanksgiving Day parade when Santa comes in. And that's the official start for Christmas.
Okay.
For me.
Okay.
But hey, Richard Sherman, you can't say anything. If Richard Sherman says it,
look,
he's all for it.
I disagree with him on that. I disagree with him on this. However, I agree with him on what he said yesterday, talking about to the media. He was talking about this game against the Seahawks. He was talking about overtime, and he was talking about people's reaction to the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan deciding to throw the ball three straight times instead of going for the tie. And Richard Sherman was speaking to the media, and he had this to say about that reaction.
I mean, that's coming from people who don't know ball, if I'm being honest. And you get to the point where you got armchair, you know, quarterbacks, armchair GMs, armchair coaches, like, oh man, I would have done this. And that's why you're sitting on the couch and not in this sport as a professional. You got people who don't do this for a living talking about what they would have done. And it's cool for I guess social media chatter is great for there. But as you know, people who play the game and who put the sacrifice in, who go out there and lay their bodies on the line, you don't play for a tie.
So, Anna, I was of the ilk that I was cool with them throwing three straight times and going for the win because just you either win or lose in this game. Going for a tie in football, it just doesn't feel American to me. And clearly what Richard Sherman is saying here is that I'm obviously a football player.
You are because you're not an armchair coach, as he says. You're not coaching from your chair.
I mean, I was, you know, I might have been sitting on my couch making the decision here thinking that's okay.
But you could have played. Because you would have went for the win.
That's obviously what Richard Sherman's saying.
Exactly. That's exactly what he's saying. But no, look, think about it. No player in their right mind, honestly, with that intensity wants to say, yeah, let's just go for the tie. You're always going to go for the win because you have confidence in your team. As long as you have confidence in your team, and this team has a lot of confidence. Now they have to maintain that confidence after that loss. Can they do that this week against the Cardinals? You had, it was a tough loss, but it was a great game. It was a hard-fought battle against the Seahawks, but now you're going to be hosting the Cardinals. And you already had a tough game against them, against Kyler Murray, another mobile quarterback. So can they get the win? Can they keep that confidence, learn from their mistakes last week, and also maybe not, you know, tip off, you know, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo hopefully won't tip off some of his checkdowns?
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, but here's the thing. We got seven right now on the did not participate list in practice. So we got Matt Breida, Tevin Coleman, which wasn't injury related, so I don't think that's anything to worry about. He should be ready to go by Sunday. Not sure about Matt Breida, though. Robbie Gould, probably not going. DJ Jones, who had the one nice play, he's got a limited amount of snaps this season. He doesn't get in all that much, but he's part of that depth that the defensive line has, and you saw him just take down that backup center like it was nothing, like he was a child. Like he just pushed him right over and got to the running back. And then we also got George Kittle and Emmanuel Sanders and Joe Staley. This game against the Seahawks, once Emmanuel Sanders went out, turned completely. It didn't feel like he had any sort of, like these receivers, we were blaming them for the drops. That's the reason why they traded for Emmanuel Sanders in the first place, is because this is a pretty common thing. They didn't even have much faith before Emmanuel Sanders came along. They were not targeting their receivers all that much. And when George Kittle went out, he was forced to throw to their receivers. And that's the type of thing that happens. And so with George Kittle out, I don't think it was a coincidence that one, Jimmy Garoppolo had most likely, I think, his worst game of the season so far. And then two, the running game had its worst game of the season so far. And Matt Breida had a good game against the Cardinals last time. He took a bulk of the carries. I like Raheem Mostert a lot. He was the limited participant in practice. I think he should be a full go on Sunday. But I think Raheem Mostert can back up that role. It's going to be up to Tevin Coleman. But what George Kittle does with the run game if he's in there along with Kyle Juszczyk, Kyle Juszczyk with his first game back, he made some plays. Mm-hmm. You know, Booger McFarland was constantly praising him. And if you were watching the TV, you were watching Kyle Juszczyk and you saw he was getting the blocks off. But the thing is, with Matt Breida and Tevin Coleman, if you're not giving these guys open holes, it's not likely that they're just going to mumble and bumble and stumble through the line, kind of just like I mumbled through that. But they're not going to just burst through the offensive line and get in. They're just going to run over these linebackers, get to the second level. They're not going to do that. They need a wide open hole, and George Kittle's a big reason for that. And so this game without George Kittle, I'm not saying it's lost by any stretch, because the Cardinals are not a very good team. I think the 49ers could still win this game, but being without George Kittle against the Seahawks, without Emmanuel Sanders too, we saw what it did.
It's not so sure if that's the case, honestly, for me. If you have I think if you have either George Kittle or Emmanuel Sanders, you'll be fine. But losing both of them, that makes it a lot harder, obviously, because we saw that game plan change. Mind you, now they could also game plan for not having them. I think that was also something that might have thrown Jimmy Garoppolo for a loop too, because you're having, you know, your other wide receivers not making those catches, dropping the ball everywhere, and it just kind of, I think in the end it just kind of threw him off a bit, because you have somebody so sure-handed as all of a sudden as Emmanuel Sanders, those two were clicking together so well, and then the game just completely changed after that. Now Emmanuel Sanders, you have Kyle Shanahan saying, you know, he didn't necessarily need to practice in full yesterday as well in order to play on Sunday. So we're hoping to get him back, because if you don't get him back, it does make it a lot harder if George Kittle doesn't play as well.
And going up against Chandler Jones and Terrell Suggs, Mike McGlinchey didn't show much in that last game either. And you're going to have Justin School come back for Joe Staley.
School's back in session.
Wow. You're really just coming in with
that,
huh?
I did.
Wow. And Chandler,
I just threw you off like a...
You did.
What Emmanuel Sanders went down for Jimmy G.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, I didn't game plan. I didn't game plan for that.
But you can adjust.
I could adjust. But Chandler Jones, though, he's been a pretty damn good pass rusher this season and always has been. Going up against Justin School, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's tough. He's tough in there in the pocket, and we've seen him, you know, not be afraid to actually make some throws, but also there's guys that could give him fits. This game isn't just as much of a sure thing as I think everyone kind of made it out to be. But one guy who had a monster game against the Seahawks was Fred Warner, and Robert Saleh was talking about him yesterday, and here's Robert Saleh talking about Fred Warner.
I don't think he's changed. I know Quan has such an electric personality, but Fred's always been he's the Mike linebacker. He's in front of the huddle. He's always had that steady presence, and he's been fantastic since the day he walked in as a rookie. So continue to grow, continue to get better, and continue developing his personal mindset.
Now, Warner had his best game of his career against the Seahawks, but I will say this, with Quan Alexander coming to this team, he changed Fred Warner's mindset completely. I think Quan Alexander taught him, like, hey, it's okay to be a little cocky every once in a while. Now, Fred Warner didn't have many moments where he could be cocky, because he was making plays last season, but they were down in the score. Right. So it's like, what are you going to say? But right now, I think he brought that out of him. I'm seeing a completely different Fred Warner in terms of emotion. The play is still the same, but the talking is really what gets me when I'm watching him on the field.
Yeah, he was a promising young player last year, and he was somebody like, okay, he's going to be somebody special down the road in the future. And you're right, Quan Alexander brought out a confidence in him, and that's kind of that veteran presence, what makes him so important, what makes him such a good leader on this team, and that's why he's so incredibly missed now going out for the season. He's also one of those players I think is a little underrated. He's been underrated. Who do you think is the most underrated player for the 49ers?
Most underrated?
Yeah.
If I had to put that would probably have to go to... Well, see, here's the thing. We are seeing in a limited participant in practice. He could come back, but that's Akello Witherspoon, and he could come back to this team. Kaywan Williams has been one of, if not the most underrated players on this team that hasn't really been talked about, just because most of the time, if you're not getting thrown at, then you're not even noticing what these guys in the secondary are doing. That's why Richard Sherman, he gets the praise from 49er fans, but from people around the NFL, they just give him praise because he's Richard Sherman. But Kaywan Williams, though, this season, couple of INTs, 67.6 passer rating when he's targeted, 22 tackles, 3 forced fumbles, 2-1 game. It's like Kawan Williams has been the most underrated player on this team so far. And then another underrated player, I think it actually goes to these guards, to both of them. I think that these guards for the 49ers so far, with Laken Tomlinson, as well as Weston Richburg, and Ben Garland coming in for Weston Richburg, he should be coming back too. But these guards have been able to carry the load. We talked about this before the season, and we were dead wrong. But
we were nervous.
The interior offensive line was something that we did not know that could at least thrive. But right now, they may not be protecting Jimmy G all that well, but as far as just the run game is concerned, the 49ers being one of the best running teams in the league, I think the interior of that line is a big reason for that, as well as George Kittle. I think those guys have been underrated too.
Yeah, you know, remember Kawan Williams, what you're talking about him, that, you know, Richard Sherman was the one who got him on the ballot, basically, because he shouted out how great he is and that he should be in the Pro Bowl. And because of all the great play, that all the stuff that you're talking about, and now he is on the Pro Bowl ballot, which I'm excited to see how many of these players are actually going to make the Pro Bowl. You know, there's a lot of names out there that are in consideration when think about it.
Okay, so let's look at it. Let's look at the offense real quick. Do we consider Jimmy Garoppolo to be a Pro Bowler?
He's a candidate. I'm kind of not quite there yet. I think he's close, but he's not quite there yet. What do you think?
He's not there. Yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't put him in that conversation, but I think toward the end of the season, he could be there. I think he could be in the running for it.
Yes.
I think he could be, unless he has another game like he had this last time, because if you're going without George Kittle again, you got to prove to these people that you got to do it. Because without Emmanuel Sanders and without George Kittle, it's like, all right, well, if you don't have the weapons, then well, what are you doing? Like are you that expensive? Are you that franchise quarterback that we all need? There's still question marks surrounding him, even after this last game, which is just one bad game. But I think Jimmy Garoppolo could be a Pro Bowler. I'm not sure anyone else on the offense, though, is necessarily a Pro Bowler, just because this entire defense, it feels like can make
George
the Pro
Kittle.
Bowl. Well, George Kittle, yeah. But
that's it, sure.
Yeah. But it feels like this entire defense, though.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you could just put the whole, you know, just put the entire Niner defense.
Yeah, the entire one. The entire
one.
That's
all you need to do.
No, realistically. Realistically, I mean, we're going to be seeing Nick Bosa there.
Yeah.
I thought, Kawan Williams is right up there.
He is right there.
Kawan Williams is right up there, along with Richard Sherman, too. Anyone on the secondary, this secondary has been unbelievable. It helps when you have a front seven like the Niners have had, and they can get to the quarterback with four, and they can just play, and the linebackers can just play zone and help out the pass coverage. But these guys are communicating as well as they've communicated before. Jaquaski Tart and Jimmy Ward, both former high school teammates at one point. Now it seems like they're on the same page. And then on the other side, you got Richard Sherman, Kawan Williams, and Emmanuel Mosley. Feels like the entire side. I mean, it's not realistic that the entire secondary is going to get to the Pro Bowl, right? There's obviously some better cornerbacks out there. But it feels like there's not many on this team that you could say, they're not going to be Pro Bowlers this upcoming year.
Yeah, this team has this defense has been incredibly impressive. And would you maybe put Richard Sherman on there, would you think?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd put Richard Sherman on there because he doesn't get thrown at. It's that Nnamdi Asomugha feel to it right now. Where
I like that.
Nnamdi was that guy on the Raiders who just emerged as one of the best corner, like the replacement for Charles Woodson. He emerged as one of those guys. Richard Sherman was kind of the same as when he was with the Seahawks. And now guys know that he's just so smart. They don't even bother to throw at him anymore. Plus what he's doing tackling wise. He's laying wood.
Yeah. Up from the 95 on the Chilled Auto Body text line. The fullback is a Pro Bowler. Kyle Juszczyk. That's another one on the offense.
But also though, he was out for a good little chunk of the season, but if he's in for the rest of the season, for the next 6 weeks, I kind of just forgot about him since he's been injured for the most of the time, but he just came back in this last game. But Kyle Juszczyk is definitely up there too. On the other side, when we're looking at Arizona though, and we're talking about how Kyle Shanahan is going to game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo, possibly playing without Emmanuel Sanders and George Kittle. A guy who's going to game plan for a certain player on the Cardinals is going to be Robert Saleh, and he's going to be game planning for Kenyon Drake. Obviously, Kyler Murray. We know what Kyler Murray is going to do. He's going to scamper around. He's one of the more fascinating quarterbacks that I've seen, just because of how small he is, how quick he is, and how how fast he could sling the ball.
Yeah.
For one, he has a cannon. You could just tell. I'm telling you, it reminds me a little bit. I'm not saying he's this player. This gets misunderstood a lot, but he reminds me a little bit, his throwing motion, of what Patrick Mahomes can do. They both have the sort of sidearm action where they're able to get the ball off pretty much from any stance, and they're able to throw it with velocity. That's just the baseball players in them coming out. I see a lot of the same stuff when they're both throwing on the run, but that's just me. But Kenyon Drake, 15 carries for 110 yards in this last game with a touchdown. I don't know if they were necessarily ready when Kenyon Drake got traded to the Cardinals. They had a couple of days, I think, just a game plan for him. So, I mean, they weren't ready for what Kenyon Drake was going to bring. I think Robert Saleh is at least going to get him ready for that.
Okay, so now, even with potential injuries, how much do you expect to see improvement after already facing the Cardinals very, very recently, after seeing them already once and seeing what they did? How much of an improvement do you think we should get from the 49ers defense against the Cardinals, even with Kwon Alexander out?
Kwon Alexander, he's been great in pass coverage, and he's been fine. And the Cardinals don't really have anyone at tight end, so it's not that much of a worry as far as that. But in run defense, Kwon hasn't been that great this season before he went out.
Right.
So I'm expecting Dre Greenlaw to be able to take over that role. But the one guy I'm going to be watching for, and he seemed to have a resurgence in the past couple of games, and that's going to be Christian Kirk, because that's a guy that at the time 2 weeks ago, I know this is it's taken a while, but they were kind of on track to Kyler Murray and him to having that sort of wide receiver quarterback connection that everyone oh so desires. But in the past couple of weeks, though, it seems that they're on the right train here. And Christian Kirk, in his last game, 10 receptions for 138 yards. Or 6 receptions, rather, for 138 yards. They targeted him 10 times, 11, 5, and 10. That's how much they've targeted him in the last 3 games. I think Christian Kirk could have a pretty big one, but going up against the secondary, it's hard to imagine that any receiver can go up well, can do well against this team right now. But I see the 49ers winning this game overall, because Cliff Kingsbury makes those weird decisions. He's a good offensive play caller. He designs plays well, but the decision making that he has, I just don't trust Cliff Kingsbury decision making if they're in a close game like that. Like that game against the Seahawks going into overtime, I don't know necessarily that if this was against the Cardinals, the decision making there, I don't know if it would have gone to overtime like that, because I don't think the Seahawks would have been, or I don't think the Cardinals, say if they were in that situation where they're, you know, in the 2-minute drill and they got to drive down the field, I don't think they'd be able to do that. So I think the 49ers are going to just outright win this game tonight.
Yeah, Sunday night. Yeah, I'm with you on that too. I think they're going to get this one too. Now, Nick Bosa, last time when he faced the Cardinals, had 3 quarterback hurries on Kyler Murray. What do you expect out of him this time?
Oh, just the same thing. Yeah, this guy, he can get double teamed. He can get chipped from the running back, whatever it may be. But Nick Bosa, he's going to do the exact same thing. He's at that point now where you can just expect him to at least, like, it felt like he got held on a couple of plays in this last game against the Seahawks. I'm not going to create any excuses for that, but he's the type of guy that's going to cause the holding penalties. Is there a stat for that, for a defensive lineman who has caused holding penalties on a tackle? Like, there should be some
it
sort of stat.
Should be, yeah.
There should be some sort of stat for that, because a big reason as to why the holding happens is not just because the offensive lineman made a mistake. It's because that's all they could do against Nick Bosa. I'm expecting to see the same thing, but also, what was it? He ran, I think, 19 miles an hour when chasing after Kyler Murray at
Absolutely
one point
ridiculous.
When Kyler Murray was running out of bounds. So I'm expecting the same exact thing from him, but that's just all about whether they can keep Kyler Murray in the pocket. If he bounces out the pocket, then there's no way Nick Bosa's catching him. So it's up to the other defensive linemen, too, to kind of keep him in there and let Nick Bosa just do work. So I expect the exact same thing.
Yeah, you're a nice guy, Steven, so NGS, you better get that next-gen stats working, all
right? I mean, he's the separation that he's had from these quarterbacks whenever he's rushing the passer, it's like it's been below 3.5 on average every single game. And that's something you don't see often among defensive linemen. With this, that separation there is what tells me how close he's getting to the quarterback, and it's been less than 3.5 yards on average. So I'm expecting the exact same thing from him this game. It's just a question as to whether he's going to finish or not. That's really what it comes down to for him. This game, though, Deebo Samuel's got to step up because it's clear, like he did in this last game, but even more. He's got to be that guy that they can go to in the red zone because right now they don't really have that guy. Kendrick Bourne they went to in the red zone. Maybe it's that guy. But
had some drops, and Dante Pettis on thin ice.
Deebo Samuel's the guy that he's got to make plays on Sunday night, rather, or Sunday afternoon.
They're going to need his physicality definitely in a game like this right now. So he needs to go out there, be the big man, and make those plays, because we've obviously seen there's a lot of issues right now at wide receiver. If Emmanuel Sanders is out, if he's out again, you need a big game, another big game. You know, more again, same thing. He had 112 yards last time. He needed 100 plus yards this time if Emmanuel Sanders is out.
I mean, this is going to be one that's a little better than expected, because watching that game 2 weeks ago, before these injuries happened, I'm like, all right, well, look, they're going to game plan for it. They're going to be fine. They're going to win this game outright. I'm not as sure about that. I still think the 49ers are going to win. But going into this game, I'm going in there with a little less confidence than I had a couple of weeks ago after they beat them beforehand. All right, coming up, we are going to be having Larry Centers joining Jolo and Tibbs. That's actually going to be an interesting one. Coming up at 8:30, Bob Myers at 9:30, and of course, Adam Kaplan at 7 o'clock. He'll give us some info on everything surrounding the NFL and what's to come from those crazy suspensions, Hannah. Anything else?
Don't hate decorate, people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.